and he wasn't going to argue. Funny that. For years he'd thought of Mboo as a sort of mobile smile, a handy lad with a brush and a shovel, but not what you might call a major achiever. And then suddenly, someone somewhere wanted 1,000 elephants, and the lad had raised his head and a gleam had come into his eye, and you could see that under that grin was a skilled chylopachydermatolist, ready to answer the call. Funny, you could know someone for their whole life and not realise that the gods had put them into this world to move 1,000 elephants around the place. Azurael had no sons. He'd already made up his mind to leave everything to his assistant. Everything he had at this point amounted to 363 elephants and a ha-ha-ha, a mammoth overdraft. But it was the thought that counted. Mboo trotted up the path towards him, his clipboard held firmly under one arm.
"Everything ready, boss," he said. "You just got to say the word."
Azurael drew himself up. He looked around at the heaving plain, the distant baobab trees, the purple mountains. Oh yes, the mountains. He'd had misgivings about the mountains. He'd mentioned them to Mboo, who'd said, "We'll cross them bridges when we get to 'em, boss." And when Azurael had pointed out that there weren't any bridges, he had looked him squarely in the eye and said firmly, "First we build them bridges, then we cross 'em." Far beyond the mountains was the Circle Sea and Ankh Morpork, and this holy wood place, faraway places with strange-sounding names. A wind blew across the veldt, carrying faint whispers even here. Azurael raised his staff.
"It's 1,500 miles to Ankh Morpork," he said. "We've got 363 elephants, 50 carts of forage, the monsoon's about to break, and we're wearing sort of things like glass, only dark glass things on our eyes."
His voice trailed off, his brow furrowed as if he'd just been listening to his own voice and hadn't understood it. The air seemed to glitter. He saw Mboo staring at him. He shrugged.
"Let's go," he said.
Mboo cupped his hands. He'd spent all night working out the order of the march.
"Blue section belong Uncle Ngru. Forward," he shouted. "Yellow section belong Auntie Gugul. Forward. Green section belong second cousin Kik. Forward."
An hour later, the veldt in front of the low hill was deserted except for a billion flies and one dung beetle who couldn't believe his luck. Something went plop on the red dust, throwing up a little crater. And again. And again. Lightning split the trunk of a nearby baobab. The rains began. Victor's back was beginning to ache. Carrying young women to safety looked a good idea on paper, but had major drawbacks after the first 100 yards. "Have you any idea where she lives?" he said. "And is it somewhere close?"
"No idea," said Gaspode.
"She once said something about it being over a clothes shop," said Victor.
"That'll be in the alley alongside Borgles, then," said Gaspode.
Gaspode and Laddie led the way through the alleys and up a rickety outside staircase. Maybe they smelled out Ginger's room. Victor wasn't going to argue with mysterious animal senses. Victor went up the back stairs as quietly as possible. He was dimly aware that where people stayed was often infested by the common or greatly suspicious landlady, and he felt that he had enough problems as it was. He used Ginger's feet to push open the door. It was a small room, low-ceilinged and furnished with the sad, washed-out furniture found in rented rooms across the multiverse. At least, that's how it had started out. What it was furnished with now was Ginger. She had saved every poster, even those from early clicks, when she was just in very small print as a girl. They were thumbtacked to the walls. Ginger's face and his own stared at him from every angle. There was a large mirror at one end of the pokey room and a couple of half-burned candles in front of him. Victor deposited the girl carefully on the narrow bed and then stared around him very carefully. His 6th, 7th and 8th senses were screaming at him. He was in a place of magic. "It's like a sort of temple," he said. "A temple to herself."
"It gives me the willies," said Gaspode.
Victor stared. Maybe he'd always successfully avoided being awarded the pointy hat and the big staff, but he had acquired wizard instincts. He had a sudden vision of a city under the sea, with octopuses curling stealthily through the drowned doorways and lobsters watching the streets.
"Fate don't like it when people take up more space than they ought to. Everyone knows that."
"I'm going to be the most famous..."